You know what I didn't realize? I did not realize how violent that Chucky show is on USA. Has it always been this violent? I'm getting ready here. I'm getting everything ready for the stream. Chucky was left on the TV because Chucky goes on right after Raw ends on USA. I was kind of begging for Chucky at different points during the show tonight. And he's chopping this woman's head off and her neck is open. There's blood splattering all over the place. He's dropping F-bombs. When did this happen? When was this okay for basic cable? Not that I'm opposed to it. I was just shocked that they allow this level of violence on basic cable. I would expect this on HBO or Showtime or something. I'm very surprised. I'm impressed with what USA allows them to get away with. I'm surprised that USA allowed Triple H to get away with this show tonight. You know, the last few weeks, Raw has been on a roll. Raw has really, it's found its groove with Triple H, you know, pushing some new faces on the show and everything. All the segments just felt like they were clicking. It just had a different vibe, you know. The energy had a different kind of feeling to the shows over these last couple of weeks. And then tonight, that's why I brought back Little Green Guy with the hole. I said, tonight, we got to bring him back. That's what it felt like. That was me watching this show, trying valiantly not to fall into the three-hour hole that you saw there on your screen. I'm like, what the hell happened here? It's like we regressed. It's like we went backwards. What a boring show tonight overall. Holy shit. And here I was starting to have, I was starting to feel good about Monday Night Raw. I hope I wasn't misled. I mean, I know they can't all be home runs, but I mean, it was hard to stay awake for different parts of the show tonight. I was looking for a good image to kind of sum up me during this show tonight. And this is the one that that's not the image I was going for. There we go. I don't know where that came from, but that was me, not the other one. That was me during Raw tonight. I was Batista in this image watching Monday Night Raw. Of all the episodes of Raw that we have gotten this year, this was certainly one of them. It was like Triple H said, you know, we've got Monday Night Football and we've got playoff baseball to compete against, so we'll just mail this one in. You know, it was one of those weeks where, you know, the 3 hours, it hits you like a ton of bricks. Because what you have Triple H and what he's trying to do, clearly what he's trying to do, and I'm not saying he's wrong for doing this, but, you know, in effect, he's hitting the reset button with a lot of different people on this show, and you see a lot of these faces on the program, whether it's Johnny Gargano, whether it's Xia Li, whether it's Indy Hartwell, right, and some of these other people that we get on these shows. And effectively what he is doing is, you know, Nikki Cross is another one. He's reintroducing them to the audience because they either haven't been seen in so long or they just haven't been utilized in so long. And so he's effectively hitting the reset button and trying to reintroduce these people. Meanwhile, you can't expect the audience to give a damn on day one. This stuff takes time. Rome wasn't built in a day. But just the way the show was laid out and put together and to have so many segments on the show where even the crowd, and I can't even blame the crowd in Dallas. You know, Dallas is a great wrestling city. I can't even blame them. They didn't really have a whole lot to be excited about watching this show tonight. Sami Zayn and Drew McIntyre woke them up too. Right at the top of the third hour. They had the best match on the entire card. And it was interesting because this was also a very Judgment Day heavy show, as Raw has been now for many months, but where you have the Bloodline on SmackDown dominating the show for so long, that is what the Judgment Day is to Monday Night Raw. And they have this storyline that's ongoing where Rhea Ripley and the Judgment Day are attempting to recruit various people into their group. Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, right? They're making offers to people and trying to get them to join. And Nick Grasso actually dropped the message before and made a very interesting point. And I was kind of thinking about this. Actually, I had Tatanka and Lex Luger on my brain, but that's not the right storyline. But Nick pointed out something that I think is very interesting. He said the McIntyre-Rollins Judgment Day stuff reminds him of the Ric Flair, Mr. Perfect, Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior storyline, going into going into SummerSlam in 1992, when Flair and Perfect wanted the world to believe that the Macho Man was going to be with them, right? They were in cahoots, but then they also wanted you to think that, well, maybe the Ultimate Warrior is in cahoots with them. Whose corner are they going to be in at SummerSlam? Because Flair didn't have a match that year. And as it turned out, neither one of them were in cahoots with Flair and Perfect, but that was the story going into the show. They wanted you to think that maybe there was a chance. And he's right. I do feel that there's a little bit of that in this story that they're telling here. Although McIntyre and Rollins in one segment tonight made it very clear. They said, no Judgment Day at Crown Jewel. And Drew said, no Judgment Day. But in the back of your mind, you're still wondering, right? That little conversation that Rhea Ripley and Drew McIntyre had backstage all those weeks ago, is there something going on there? So that's the story they're trying to tell, and I think that story is fine. Drew McIntyre continues to be one of the more intriguing characters on the entire show. I like what they're doing with Drew. I have no issue with that. But they also did an injury angle on the show right at the very beginning. They did an injury angle with Cody Rhodes, and they made you think, I mean, it was almost as if they were writing him off television, but they attacked the ankle. And so what happens at the very end of the show, Cody valiantly hobbles back down to the ring and single-handedly saves the day and saves Jey Uso from a beatdown at the hands of the Judgment Day. Where that story is going, I don't know, as far as the injured ankle, but they're doing Cody Rhodes and Damian Priest one-on-one at Crown Jewel, which begs the question, is there something tangible going to be on the line in that match? And if there is, there's one very important thing that is tangible that could be on the line in that match, although they did nothing tonight to even tease that direction. Logan Paul was on the show tonight. Did not need to be on the show tonight. We just saw Logan Paul on SmackDown Friday night. His match is made with Rey Mysterio for Crown Jewel. They're going to be wrestling for the United States Championship. Rey Mysterio's on the SmackDown brand. Logan Paul's a free agent, so he can float. But he's already got his story locked down with Rey for Saudi Arabia, so I didn't really see the need for him to be on the show tonight, especially when Logan Paul is on the show, but the Intercontinental Champion, Gunther, is nowhere to be found on the very day that Gunther has hit 500 days as the Intercontinental Champion. Right? This big milestone. And he's not even on the show. How is he not on the show? Of all days, he's not on the show tonight. So Logan Paul was on the show, but Gunther was not. We'll talk about this show, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I can't even say that it was ugly. It was just boring. It was a show. It existed in the universe. 3 hours. See, that's where you feel the 3 hours. That's where you really feel. You didn't really hear me talking about the 3 hours over the last couple of weeks because it wasn't as noticeable. When you have a show like this that just drags and there's just not a whole lot going on and the crowd isn't even into it and they're sitting there with their hands under their asses, that's where the 3 hours just comes out of nowhere and smacks you in the face and you're like, fuck, there's no need for this show to be 3 hours, but it is. But this is your Monday Night Raw review. It is October 23rd, 2023. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here tonight. Please do subscribe and like this video if you have not already done so. And let's shoot for 400 likes if we can get there. I don't know. It's been a slow end of the month. I don't know. There's not a whole lot going on. I don't know. End of October here. Doesn't feel like there's a whole lot going on. I'm hoping November things will pick up. There's 3 pay-per-views in November. It's going to be a busy month. But let's see if we can get to 400 likes on this. If so, we'll do Be the Booker. If not, then we won't. Super chats are open. There's some new ones as well. Channel memberships are open. You can gift them as well. So again, all that information is down below if you would like to do so. Let's get into this here. Raw opened with highlights from the end of the show last week, which was newsworthy because Finn Balor and Damian Priest, they regained their undisputed tag team titles from Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso, thanks to an assist from Jimmy Uso. So we had highlights of that. Finn Balor and Damian Priest made their way to the ring all by themselves, and they talked about having the gold back, silver, actually, before being interrupted by Cody Rhodes, who was in his trademark suit. In the ring, Cody asked them how it felt to be interrupted. And he looked at Balor and he had some choice words for the leader of the Judgment Day. And then he paused and he said, but I don't see Rhea Ripley out here. I knew that line was coming. Cody assumed they would claim that the Judgment Day has no leader, but he said everybody knows that Rhea is their mommy too. And Cody said Ripley is the one cutting all the deals, including one with the Bloodline. I was very happy to see them at least make mention of that on the show. It's the first time it's even been brought up since SmackDown, what was it, 3 weeks ago now. Cody said that the low blow that Priest hit him with is not the final shot in their fight. Priest brought up Cody's story. He says, Cody, you have a story. And he said that they could put that pretty much, basically, it's a failure. Cody's story so far has been a failure. Cody loosened his tie. He said that they could put that theory to the test right now. Priest asked if Cody was going to pretend that he doesn't have a match, Priest does, with Jey Uso in the main event tonight. Priest said they can meet at Crown Jewel, which Cody accepted. Then he said that they could give everybody a preview of Crown Jewel right now. And Priest said he liked that idea. So, of course, here comes Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio. Cody sees them. He looks down the aisle. He turns around. He sees the other two. He's surrounded, right? He's outnumbered. He's outmanned. He has nowhere to go. And Jey Uso runs out. He attacks Dominic from behind in the aisle. In the ring, Cody got the better of Priest, knocked him out of the ring, cleared off the announce desk. He was setting up for a power bomb, just like Priest did to him. He put him through the table last week with the razor's edge. But before he could do anything, JD McDonagh showed up. He chop-blocked Cody from behind. Priest took a chair, and he placed the steel chair flat up against the ring steps. McDonagh held Cody. Priest then took a second chair and he slammed it against Cody's leg so it was sandwiched in between the two chairs. Adam Pearce and a whole bevy of referees and producers ran out to break things up and Cody was down selling a leg injury. After when they came back, we were in the back and Cody had his shoe off. He was selling his ankle. He was with Adam Pearce and Jey Uso. And Jey helped Cody to the trainer's room and the announcers mentioned that the match is now official, and they put the graphic up and everything. They said at Crown Jewel. Well, did they put the graphic up? I thought they did. But they said it was official for Crown Jewel. It will be Cody Rhodes one-on-one against Damian Priest. But they wondered what would Cody's condition be going into the match, which I took as a sign that, okay, this is not a way for them to write Cody off television. This is not some sort of cover for a real injury. This is hardly the first time that they have done this story with Cody Rhodes, where he has an injured part of his anatomy going into a big pay-per-view match. He spent the better half of the year, the middle half of this year, basically walking around with a cast on his arm every week during his feud with Brock Lesnar. So here we are yet again, where Cody is injured going into a big pay-per-view match. Now it's the ankle. The last time we had a Cody Rhodes-Damian Priest singles match, I knew it was Raw. I didn't know what month it was, but it was June. They had a singles match on Raw in June. And I was surprised by that because it just felt to me like we've seen this match several times already. And if it feels that way, it's for good reason because even though they've only had one singles match that Cody won, they have been involved in multiple tag team matches since then, all the way up until the present day. And that's really been the story with the Judgment Day on Raw. Over and over and over again with Kevin Owens. Over and over and over again with Sami Zayn. Over and over and over again with Cody Rhodes. Over again several times with Seth Rollins. So we've seen some variation of Cody and Priest now many, many times. So the announcement that the two of them are going to have a match at Crown Jewel isn't very exciting. Because it's something where you think about it, you're like, wait, I feel like I've seen this on television every week for the last 6 months. And you wouldn't be wrong, because you basically have. Which begs the question, is there anything on the line in this match? Are they going to announce that there is some sort of stipulation, that there's something tangible on the line in this match? Well, it just so happens that Damian Priest is walking around with a Money in the Bank briefcase. And I've had people ask me about this before, and I didn't really think it was something that Cody needed. But here we are. We are now going into this pay-per-view in just a few weeks. We are heading into WrestleMania season. WrestleMania is getting very close, right? The Royal Rumble is getting very close. And Cody was not traded to SmackDown. Kevin Owens was traded to SmackDown. So we're going to have to start asking the question very soon. How is WWE going to get to Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns? They're already teasing it. We know it's going to happen. The Rock is not coming back. The Rock is not wrestling at WrestleMania. The Rock was never wrestling at WrestleMania. You have to let that go. There are still some people who think that's going to happen. It's not. The main event is Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes in a rematch from this year's WrestleMania. But Cody is on SmackDown. Roman is on Raw. Does that mean that Cody wins the Royal Rumble for a second straight year? Possibly, yes. It's not what I'd like to see, but that would be one way for him to earn a shot at the championship of his choosing. Now, there's also the Elimination Chamber. They don't do the Elimination Chamber every year where the winner of the chamber gets to pick the title of their choosing or gets to wrestle the World Heavyweight Champion at WrestleMania. Take this year, for example. The Elimination Chamber match had the United States title on the line. In past years, they've had the championship itself defended at Elimination Chamber. And most years, and correct me if I'm wrong, when they do those chambers where the winner goes to WrestleMania to get a shot at the world title, it's usually reserved for wrestlers on one particular brand, whichever championship is not already accounted for. So whoever wins the Royal Rumble, if they pick Seth Rollins, okay, well, then you would probably have a SmackDown Chamber match with six SmackDown stars, and the winner would challenge Roman Reigns. But again, Cody is not on SmackDown. So it's looking increasingly likely that the briefcase is going to be one of the easiest ways to get to your destination. If Cody wins the briefcase, if they could find some rationale, and I could see J.D. McDonagh having something to do with that, but if they could find some rationale for Damian Priest to put that briefcase on the line, put the contract up for grabs in Saudi Arabia at Crown Jewel, that could be how Cody Rhodes gets his hands on that. Now he's got that in his back pocket heading into WrestleMania season. And if he doesn't win the Royal Rumble, and if he doesn't have another way, he's got that contract that he can cash in. But even if Cody doesn't win the briefcase, I still feel like it should be on the line at Crown Jewel because it adds drama to the match. Because a lot of people would automatically assume that he is going to win. And then if he doesn't, you'll have a lot of very shocked people. So whether he wins the briefcase or not, I actually think that they should put it on the line at Crown Jewel. Because otherwise, it's a television match. There's got to be something at stake. We had the New Day against the Alpha Academy for the first time ever. Gable and Otis had Maxine in their corner as well as Akira Tozawa, who is wearing an Alpha Academy shirt, and he is their new pupil. They're playing that up for comedy. Otis did the caterpillar on Kofi Kingston. Gable tagged in. Woods wanted to tag out, but Kingston was still down. So Woods started his own caterpillar. Xavier Woods did a reverse caterpillar here during this match where he was going backwards, which is a very stupid thing to do. And of course, he paid the price for it because as he was doing a reverse caterpillar, Chad Gable just caught him and grabbed the ankle and put him in an ankle lock, which he deserved. So he has him in the ankle lock. Woods countered into a pinning attempt for a two count. Otis got a blind tag, and when Gable came charging towards Woods, he low-bridged Gable out of the ring. Didn't realize that Otis was the legal man. Otis scooped him up, but Woods countered out of it, whatever it was that he was going to go for. I guess a power slam. He found his way out of it, and he tagged out with Kofi finally being back on the apron. Kofi put Otis down with Trouble in Paradise and then hit a flip dive onto Chad Gable on the floor. And then Xavier Woods hit his top rope elbow drop on Otis, and he pinned him. And the crowd was pretty quiet for the majority of this match, which was paint-by-number stuff between these two teams. Not much else to say about it. Very basic match. Backstage, Jackie Redmond had a little chat with the NXT Women's Champion, Becky Lynch. And she talked about Indy Hartwell never losing her NXT Women's Championship, which is true. She had to give it up due to injury, and then she ended up getting called up to the main roster. As Becky was talking, you could see far off in the background was Xia Li, who was watching and listening. She had her arms crossed, and she was paying attention very intently to everything that Becky Lynch was saying. It's like she was stalking her. We got a vignette hyping Ivar as one true warrior, with him in the woods, surrounded by a bunch of other nameless Vikings during some sort of Viking ceremony. They were in the forest. And then all of a sudden, here comes Valhalla with a red trunk that had the TNA logo on the side. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm lapsing into my Bound for Glory report here. They were in the woods, too, at the end of that pay-per-view. They should have thrown the trunk back into the Lake of Reincarnation, where they got it from. So Valhalla did appear in the vignette as well. She also did the voiceover for it. So this is Ivar's time to shine. His partner is gone for the time being. He's getting a video package now. That's how you know Triple H is going all in on Ivar. He's a tag team guy, and he's getting a video package, right? That's a good sign for him. We had a recap of the in-ring promo segment last week with Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. Thank you for the 250 likes, by the way. It's growing. It's grow. It's like a plant. You know, you put the seeds in the pot, you pour some water on it, and you'll watch it grow. Until you get this big bastard, he's taller than you are. That's what I want to see here. I want you guys to grow that thing. I want 500 likes. That's what I want to see. So thank you. After a shit Raw, it's nice to see stuff like that. I appreciate that. So we get a recap of the Rollins and McIntyre segment from last week. Backstage live, Seth bumps into Rhea Ripley. Not a bad person to bump into. She says the Judgment Day respects him because they did everything they could to take the title from him for months, and yet here Seth stands. He is still the world heavyweight champion. He found a way to persevere. They're concerned, though, about his schedule that he's been running, and they think that he could use an insurance policy against Drew McIntyre. Seth realizes this, and the talk with Drew and the deal with the bloodline, all these things, is because Rhea Ripley does not have faith in Damian Priest cashing in and beating him. And Rhea says that Seth needs her. He needs her now because right now he's just a world champion. But he can be the world champion with the Judgment Day. Joining the Judgment Day means that Damian Priest could cash in maybe on Roman Reigns and go after his championship instead. And then they could all hold gold together. They could have the world heavyweight title. They could have the WWE championship. Tag team titles, women's title, North American title. So then Rollins got serious. He stopped being, his clownish way. He got serious. And he said that if there's one thing he does not want, it is to be anything like Roman Reigns. And Rhea Ripley said, that wasn't a no. She said, think about it. And she smiled as she walked. So again, like Nick said earlier, very much you get these vibes from that storyline in 92, which was a nice hook, going into the show. Is Seth Rollins going to join? Is Drew McIntyre going to join? Who's going to be the one to take the bait? In the end, we probably find out it's neither one of them, because frankly, we know Rollins isn't joining. There are a lot of people who think Drew McIntyre is going to end up joining the Judgment Day. Maybe he'll replace Damian Priest. Maybe he'll get kicked out. I just don't think Drew McIntyre is a good fit. I just don't. Not that I can't see a Scottish guy in the Judgment Day, right? We have an Irishman in there. It's not that. It's just I don't see him needing the Judgment Day, and I don't see him, even as a heel, needing them or being part of the group. But of the two, if somebody was going to end up joining, it would be Drew. But I just don't think it's going to be either one of them. Becky Lynch defended her NXT Women's Championship against Indy Hartwell, the former NXT Women's Champion. They showed Lyra Valkyria at ringside. For those of you who don't watch NXT, you're probably wondering, what? Who? Lyra Valkyria. She is challenging Becky Lynch at Halloween Havoc, night one. Tomorrow night for the NXT Women's Championship, which basically told you Becky Lynch wasn't losing her title here. But she was front row ringside, and nobody knew who she was. Yeah, usually they put these people on camera. Even when Tiffany Stratton was there a few weeks ago, yeah, she got a little reaction from the crowd. People know who she is. Tiffany Stratton's going to be a huge star. Nobody knew who Lyra Valkyria was. Either that or they didn't care. Candice LeRae was shown watching her girl Indy. She was backstage watching on a monitor. Becky tried for the disarm her. Indy blocked it. Indy gave her a version of snake eyes and then a sidewalk slam. Someone's been watching some Kevin Nash matches on Peacock, I see. So Indy was in control going into a commercial break. After the break, Becky got a middle rope superplex. Is it really a superplex, though? Is it really... if you do it from the middle rope, is it really a superplex? Eh. I don't really think so. But she hits the superplex. I don't know what else to call it, so we'll call it a superplex. She immediately transitioned into a disarm her attempt, but again, Indy blocked it. She powers up and power bombs Becky for two. Hartwell got another near fall on a spine buster. At that point, they traded pin attempts back and forth until Becky finally got the armbar locked on after trying numerous times earlier. She finally gets the disarm her, and Indy had no choice but to tap out. And when the match was over, Becky put her hand out. She shook hands with Indy. And then Becky left the ring. She went face-to-face with Lyra at ringside as the announcers hyped up NXT tomorrow night. Backstage, Candice was watching. She gets attacked. She gets ambushed by Xia Li. And Xia kneels down and tells her that that's a message for Indy as well. And we are going to get a match between Xia and Candice on Raw next Monday. One of the things I like about the Becky Lynch matches, and this one had no heat, I thought Indy looked fine. But again, the match just had no heat. It was basically a cold match. But the thing that I like about what they're doing with Becky and her accepting all of these comers and all of these challengers, and obviously Xia Li is going to be up next on her list after she vanquishes Lyra at Halloween Havoc, is it gives other people on the show who normally wouldn't be on the show an opportunity to get on the show and to get some face time on the show. So that's what we've seen recently with some of the people she's been in the ring with. Indy was another example of that tonight. Xia Li is another example of someone who, outside of the last few weeks, again, I asked the question, when was the last time we saw Xia Li before Triple H decided to start using her again on TV? Even when Triple H initially took power late last year, we didn't see Xia Li. She's been collecting dust. So it's a good opportunity for people to get FaceTime, but the question now is when they inevitably lose to Becky Lynch. And I still maintain my idea when Jade Cargill signed with WWE, even before we knew that she signed, the whole thing I pitched was you have Jade Cargill debut by beating Becky Lynch and taking the NXT Women's Championship. You want her to make an impact on day one. Beating Becky Lynch would go a long way towards doing so because they've already teased, you know, Jade has bumped into Becky, I believe. She's bumped into Charlotte. She's been showing up, making little cameos. She was not on the show tonight. But beating Becky Lynch, taking the NXT Women's Championship would also give you a reason to use her a little bit in NXT, which I think she could use. And I still maintain that. I think if you want to really make an impact with her, I think that's what you do. But all these other people that are wrestling Becky and losing, Tegan Knox was another one last week. The key is in the follow-up. Does Triple H have a plan for these women? Does he have an idea for Indy Hartwell right now that she's lost? Are we going to start to see her more consistently on television? Candice LeRae and all these people that we're starting to see. Because if we see them once, or if they wrestle Becky and they lose, right, and they shake hands and everybody cheers, it's like what I've talked about with Tony Khan and AEW, where we will see people and then we won't for weeks at a time. Very inconsistent. That doesn't get anybody over. All these people that go out there, and I see all the comments on Twitter, and I don't really have anything to refute it. When people come on Twitter and they go, oh, Johnny Gargano, the vanilla midget, Triple H, you know, here he is jerking off over all of his vanilla midgets from NXT that Vince McMahon held off the show. It's no wonder people aren't reacting. It's no wonder people are comatose during these shows. Reality is, Johnny Gargano's not over to this main roster audience. Indy Hartwell, Xia Li, all these people you could say that about. The key is in the follow-up. Do they or do they not have a plan to use them? I hope they do. Because this alone is not going to get Indy Hartwell over. Having an average match on television with Becky Lynch is not going to get people to care about Indy Hartwell. And we're going to just continue to see these kinds of reactions every single week if they don't have something planned for each of them going forward, which I hope they do. And I hope they get over. And the thing is, they're not all going to get over. They're not. I hope some of them hopefully will. But the law of averages just says that all these people are not necessarily going to get over. If you can get two or three of them over, I think that would be an accomplishment. Whether Indy Hartwell is going to be one of those people, that I don't know. But they have to make us care. It's not a marathon. It's not a sprint, rather. It's a marathon. It's going to take time. Backstage, Adam Pearce told a couple of security guards to be on their toes because of how things typically go during contract signings, since we had a contract signing segment coming up. And Nick Aldis showed up, which I expected because, of course, Adam Pearce showed up on Friday. You knew Nick Aldis was going to show up here on Monday, the SmackDown general manager. And he told Pearce, he goes, look, you and I, we got off on the wrong foot. Said that that's on me. And he takes full responsibility for that. He said that having Adam removed from the building the way he did on SmackDown Friday night was a rookie mistake. And he said that he just wants to have a healthy competition between the two brands. He said it didn't need to tarnish their personal relationship, and he hoped that Pearce would accept his apology. And Adam Pearce said that he understands what it's like to be the new guy, wanting to put your stamp on things. He said that while Aldis did cross a line, it was water under the bridge. And he said that rather than throwing him out of the building, he invited Aldis to stick around and watch the rest of the show so he can see how the flagship show operates. And Aldis thanked him and shook his hand before leaving. I was very happy to see Fightful shoot down any notion that War Games, if we get War Games at Survivor Series this year, is going to be a brand warfare match, because it seemed like that was the direction they might be going in. You know, we had that comment from Adam Pearce last week on SmackDown when he said, let the games begin. After he and Jey Uso got kicked out of the building by Aldis. Brand warfare is a tired, dead concept. That if Triple H is serious about wanting to have real healthy competition between the two shows, again, it's going to take time. It's been so bastardized. It's just been so played out. It doesn't mean anything. Raw versus SmackDown doesn't mean anything. Raw versus SmackDown War Games would mean absolutely nothing. Talk to me in a year. Maybe I'll come around to it a year from now. Maybe a year from now, if Triple H really wants to, you know, keep this idea of a competition, you know, red versus blue, Raw versus SmackDown, maybe one day it can mean something again. Today is not that day. That would be a terrible mistake. We don't need brand warfare. We have the Judgment Day, we have the Bloodline, we have ongoing storylines. That should be enough to form two teams to go toe-to-toe in a War Games match at Survivor Series. Now, are they building towards a match between Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis? That's a different question. See, that I could see. The battle of the two former NWA World Champions. Pearce hasn't wrestled much over the years. Aldis can get in the ring today. Right? He should be wrestling right now, but for whatever reason, they don't want him in the ring. But I could see a match between the two general managers, but even still, it's just too early for something like that, right? Take your time and build. Build to it. You just made them general managers 2 weeks ago. So this idea of brand warfare, it's way too premature for something like that. But Adam Pearce was in the ring for the next segment, which was a contract signing for the Fatal 5-Way at Crown Jewel for the Women's World Championship. Security surrounded the ring. Pearce said that the women's division has been chaotic lately, and normally he would not reward this type of behavior. But here on Raw, we settle things in the ring. So he introduced the title challengers one by one. Raquel Rodriguez was out first, then Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark, Nia Jax, and each woman, as they got into the ring, immediately signed the contract. So we didn't have to wait for all of them to be in the ring. There wasn't even a table in the ring, right? They were being very economical with this contract signing. This is the way a contract signing should be. You come down to the ring, you sign the contract. That's it. Next person comes out, you sign the contract. You want to say a few words, you want to have a handshake, fine. And then you go to the back. I like it. I like that style. in and out. I approve of this. But Nia, of course, has to be the difficult one. And so she hesitates. She doesn't want to sign the contract because Rhea's not out there yet. So Rhea Ripley comes out last. And she was pissed at Adam Pearce. She said that this was a setup for her to lose her championship. And she threatened to make his life a living hell. All Pierce was doing, she said, was ensuring that his women's division would have four fewer women in it, and she would prove that she was the most dominant woman in WWE, because mommy is always on top. So, Nia Jax takes the microphone from Adam Pearce, and the crowd boos, of course, because it's Nia Jax. And she said Rhea Ripley is smart. She said Ripley is staying out of the ring on the apron, hoping that Jax will squash all the other women in the ring. Nia Jax was insufferable, which maybe was the whole point, but she was insufferable on the microphone during this segment. And finally, she got popped in the face by Raquel when she said, "Oh, Raquel, you're from Texas," and she started talking slow. So Raquel popped her in the face. Security immediately hit the ring to separate all of them. They started chucking various geek security guards out of the ring who did absolutely nothing to stop them. And Ripley's just watching from the aisle. She's bemused by all this. Raquel and Nia were the last women standing in the ring, so even more security geeks or guards hit the ring to try to separate them. Raquel broke through. She clotheslined Nia. Nia came back, laid her out with a Samoan drop. And Rhea Ripley just smiled and waved at Nia Jax. Michael Cole on commentary said that Rhea Ripley only has a 20% chance of retaining her championships at WWE math. 20% chance of retaining her championship at Crown Jewel. Good. Keep talking like that, because that means that it's a surefire win for Rhea Ripley. I said, the fact that Rhea is defending her title in a five-way match, where she doesn't even have to be pinned to lose her title, had me worried. But the way that they're pushing her, I mean, she is all over this show. She's involved in everything on this show. So taking the championship off of her, I cannot, under any circumstances, imagine that happening in 2 weeks. The way that she's all over this show, she's going to have that title for a very long time. Backstage, Ludwig Kaiser told Giovanni Vinci that he needs to take out Johnny Gargano tonight because Vinci is his responsibility now. Bronson Reed showed up. Big Bronson Reed. You got to say big. Because if you don't say big, you'll have no idea how big this guy truly is. So you got to say big Bronson Reed. So BBR shows up and he tells Kaiser to let his boss know that he was ready for round two after their match last week. Kaiser seemed offended by this. He said, "My boss." He tells Reed, "Why don't you go tell Gunther yourself?" Well, that's kind of hard to do since he wasn't on the show tonight. 500 days as the Intercontinental Champion, no Gunther on the show tonight. So Imperium left, and then Akira Tozawa shows up next to Bronson Reed. And he challenges Reed to a match tonight. And Reed very politely declines. He says, "You know, I'm feeling merciful tonight, so I'm going to say no." And so Tozawa gives him a chop to the chest because he demands that he wants a match. And Reed tells him, "It's your funeral." And then he walks off. And then Maxine shows up and says, "No, no, no, not him. What are you doing?" And she was all worried that Gable was going to be upset. I don't care about any of this. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find yourself overthinking things, like your brain is racing with all kinds of thoughts and you just can't really focus on the task at hand? It could be about a big purchase you're about to make, like a house or a car or something involving a family member. Like, you know what you should do, but you just can't bring yourself to actually do it. Therapy can help you figure out what's holding you back and get your brain working for you, not against you. Therapy has a lot of potential benefits and it can help you be the best version of you that you want to be. It's not just for people that have been through an emotional trauma in their lives. If you've been thinking about giving it a try, might I suggest BetterHelp? It's online, it's convenient, and it's suited to whatever your schedule may be. You don't need to worry about getting in your car and driving to an office and then sitting in a waiting room. You can do it all from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You have nothing to lose, but so much to gain. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Johnny Gargano, one-on-one with Giovanni Vinci. It is hard for me to articulate just how terrible this version of Rebel Heart is that Johnny Gargano comes to the ring to. It pains me when I listen to this song. When I think back to all those times he would come out to it, or when he won the NXT championship, and all those moments with the CFO's song playing. It's such a great song. And it pains me to hear this version of it now that he has to come out to. I don't care what they have to do. I don't care how much money they have to pay. There's no reason. You know, Tony Khan is going around. He's throwing money out there like it grows on trees. He's paying for Europe for Final Countdown. He's paying for the Rolling Stones. He's paying for all different kinds of music. WWE, pay CFOs and get the original song back, because this version sucks. So this was such an important match here between Gargano and Vinci that not even 30 seconds into the match, they decided to show us a commercial, a trailer, for Five Nights at Freddy's. And in case you didn't know, which would be impossible if you watched the show tonight because they told you every 10 minutes, Five Nights at Freddy's premieres this Friday. And I believe it's on, is it on Peacock? Peacock or Hulu? I tuned it out. I'm not sure. I think Peacock. It's a new horror movie that's out. So they put the match in a little box in picture-in-picture, and they showed us a commercial for Five Nights at Freddy's, not 30 seconds into this match. Vinci hit him with a backbreaker and a fallaway slam. He remained in control until Ludwig Kaiser got involved. And then Tommaso Ciampa, he made his return, his big return. He made his return to crickets. And he took out Kaiser, and that allowed Gargano to hit his one final beat DDT for the quick win. This didn't even go 3 minutes. After the match, Ciampa and Gargano, they hugged and they celebrated in the ring. Now, start putting them in tag team matches. They're going to next week. We're getting DIY reunited for the first time in 3 years against Imperium. So this is the start. We've been talking about DIY. Are they going to get back together or not? Now they're an actual tag team. And we'll see them in action on Raw next week. And the tag team thing is going to be the best thing possible for them for the time being. Because this single stuff, I mean, outside of that one match that Ciampa had with Gunther, and it's Gunther, so anybody you put in the ring with him for the Intercontinental title, you're going to have that element of drama to it, right? Because who's going to be the one? It's like the Roman Reigns thing. Although Roman Reigns is, you know, obviously he's at the top of the food chain. He's been champion for a lot longer. But outside of that one match, I'll throw Ciampa in there too, not just Gargano. The people don't care. They don't care. A lot of these people, they didn't follow their singles careers in NXT. They didn't follow the DIY stuff in NXT. It can get over. It will get over on the main roster. And I trust that Triple H, who was behind their run originally in NXT, so of all people, he of all people knows what these two can do and how they could win the crowd over. Now, we're getting them back together. It's going to take time. This tag team division right now is not the strongest that it's been. No more Usos. No more Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Who knows how long the Judgment Day will even be a team for. But I think this will be the best thing for them. And just take the time to really establish them, you know, on television. And get Johnny Gargano his old music back. They aired a Shinsuke Nakamura video promo with subtitles. Nakamura said that a brutal beating from him was a beautiful thing, and he was so happy to give Ricochet this experience. Of course, they had their big match on television, Falls Count Anywhere. Nakamura said that he was looking for a new opponent who would inspire the yet-to-be-seen self within him. And he said, who is worthy enough to set me free? Oh, my goodness. Another CM Punk reference. Would you look at that? First, we have Nakamura coming out. He's dropping GTSs on television. Now he's jacking lyrics from Cult of Personality. There it is. CM Punk against Shinsuke Nakamura confirmed. You heard it here first. There's your Survivor Series match, right? CM Punk. Everyone thinks CM Punk is going to be at Survivor Series. Oh, you sorry sons of bitches. You are setting yourself up for disappointment. Why do you do this to yourself? Why? Why do you do this to yourself? Come on. I can't believe all the people. Every time I put a Punk clip up and I tell you people, he's not going to be there. He's not going to be at Survivor Series. Oh, but they're adding more seats to the show. They had 14,000. Now they have 15,000. Now they have 15,000. They're adding more. They're going to have 16,000. Oh, they must be setting up for something big. You are setting yourself up for disappointment. But hey, maybe it will set you free, as Nakamura said. Logan Paul was on the show tonight, even though we just saw him on SmackDown on Friday. And the match was made official for the United States Championship for Crown Jewel. It will be Logan Paul against Rey Mysterio. But Logan Paul was on Raw tonight for some reason. So he came out for a promo. He says that the guy that he beat in boxing recently, and again, it's that Dylan Danis guy. I guess I'm in the minority, because apparently that Logan Paul boxing fight did ridiculously well on pay-per-view, like a few million buys, I think, on pay-per-view or something like that. So I guess I'm in the minority. I don't give a shit about any of this. I don't give a shit about him. I don't give a shit about the other guy, or what he said or didn't say on social media. I guess they got Logan's fiance involved, and maybe he posted some old nude photos of her. I don't know. I don't care. But Logan Paul won't shut up about this guy. He keeps beating up on this guy nonstop. He said that that guy is so embarrassed that his fight league just dropped him, and now he is unemployed. And Logan says that he's also a free agent, much like this other guy. And after he beats Rey Mysterio for the U.S. title, maybe he'll show up on Raw to defend his title. Dominic entered to a big ovation from Logan Paul, who was very happy to see him. Not so much from the crowd here in Dallas. Crowd booed. And Logan put over Dominic and said that he overcame his deadbeat dad to become the champion of an entire continent. And he remembered that being on Raw meant that his favorite ring announcer was here. And he looked over and he saw Samantha Irvin sitting outside. And he invited her to come into the ring. He's had all these wonderfully nice things to say about her, but he wanted her to come into the ring. And she reluctantly did. And he said that he knew it was hard for her to announce him as the winner at SummerSlam over her fiance, Ricochet. But she did it because she was a professional, and so Logan Paul wanted a preview of Crown Jewel, and he asked her to announce him as the new United States champion, which she did not want to do. And at that point, Ricochet came from, I guess, out of the crowd. He tackled Logan Paul. Dominic tried to help, so Ricochet decked him. And Ricochet went for a dive out on Logan, but Dominic got in his way again, and he was about to hit Dom with, I guess, probably the 450 splash off the top, but Logan pulled Dom out to safety, and Ricochet went to go check on his fiance. Give her a shoulder to cry on. The only reason Logan Paul was on, and by the way, Ricochet will now be wrestling Dominic non-title on Raw next week, but the only reason that Logan Paul was on the show tonight, I think, was to primarily establish that he is a free agent. He is not tied down to SmackDown. He is not tied down to Raw. He could conceivably appear on both shows. He could appear on either show. We have two general managers now. One of the things I would like to see them start doing, since they have two GMs, when you have a free agent like a Logan Paul, you should have Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis going after him, negotiating, making offers, maybe some underhanded tactics in there. Maybe Adam Pearce sends a spy over to SmackDown to go eavesdrop and on his conversations, right? you could do things like that. You can have actual trades on a more regular basis, right? Instead of doing them once a year. So that's the benefit now of having proper GMs for each show. Before, it didn't make any sense. You have one person who was overseeing both shows. Now you have two. So I think that's the primary reason why he was on the show tonight, because otherwise, there was no reason for Logan Paul to be here. Right? He already has his match established with somebody on the other show. There was really no reason for him to be on the show tonight. The women's tag team champions, Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, were up next, non-title, against Natalya and a mystery partner. Because they mentioned that Tegan Nox was injured after her match, or I guess during her, she had a match in NXT, and she was injured. Now, they did not mention the nature of the injury, but I hear injury in Tegan Nox, I immediately think, oh shit, she blew out her knee. So I don't know what the nature of the injury is, but for her sake, I hope that it is not the knee. She's had ACL surgeries on both knees. If it's a knee injury, that's not a good sign. So who is the mystery partner for Natalya? It was Nikki Cross, another one who we've seen Triple H push her in the past, right? Pushed her in NXT. And Nikki Cross hasn't done a damn thing on the main roster in forever. So here's another example of Triple H taking somebody who we have not seen and trying to hit the reset button and do something with her. And so their idea for her is that she is basically walking around like she's all drugged up. She's like in a trance. She comes out and she's walking. Instead of being all wild and wacky like she used to be, she's just walking slowly. She has a blank stare on her face as she comes to the ring. She never took off her jacket. She stood on the apron in the corner and just stared straight ahead. That was kind of like me watching parts of the show tonight. I was in a trance, looking straight ahead. Natty started the match for her team. Nikki eventually dropped off the apron and walked to the back when Natty reached for a tag, right? Her partner wasn't there. So she had to fend for herself. Niven made a blind tag. Natty fought off Piper, but Chelsea put her down with the unprettier. And Niven followed with a running crossbody block for the three count. And this is really the story of a lot of matches on this show. Very short. Not really much to it. But in this case, they're trying something new with Nikki Cross. They started something with Nikki Cross and Candice LeRae, and they just never finished it. So I at least hope whatever the plan is here with Nikki, they at least actually flesh it out and finish the story. Like she's Cody. Finish the story. By the way, that reminds me. Cody, he tweeted something very interesting. I don't know if it was yesterday or earlier today. It might have been yesterday. Apparently, Cody Rhodes, and I know we have some anime fans. I don't watch anime, but he appeared in an anime. It's clearly him, and he tweeted about it. And it was him and a bunch of other people. And I don't know where they are. A woman appears, and she begins to talk to them, I guess maybe about why you're all here. And Cody is like, all right, let's go. And he goes to like attack her, and that his head explodes. And anime Cody Rhodes is killed. And then the woman says, you know, basically that was one of the things I was going to mention to you, is that you have, I guess they all have bombs inside their brains, and nobody told poor Cody Rhodes. So Cody dies. Spoiler, oops, I'm sorry, but yes, Cody dies in this anime. You're asking me what the name of it is. I have no fucking idea. Go on his Twitter, he tweeted about it. It looked interesting, but unfortunately, now he'll never finish the story because his head exploded. So Jey Uso was shown warming up backstage when Drew McIntyre approached him. And McIntyre said that he was there to say that he was very sorry because, you know, Jey lost his tag team titles last week. And he said that he was very sorry because he can't imagine how it feels to have the bloodline cost him a championship. Zing. There he is. There's Cody. His head still intact. McIntyre told him, get over it. And he said that if Jay wasn't on Raw in the first place, his match with Sami Zayn tonight would not even be happening. McIntyre said that whatever happens during the match with Sami, that's on Jay's head. So we get to the top of the third hour. Oh, we have another hour of this. That's what I was thinking. We have another hour of this. But it did get better in the next segment. But first, we had Miz in the back being interviewed. And he confronted Adam Pearce, complained about something before Rhea Ripley showed up. And she's finally signed the contract. She goes, there you go. And she gave it to Pearce, and she told him she was keeping the pen. And as she left, the camera was following Rhea, and you could hear Miz in the background basically say, where's the camera going? And it just followed her until she found Dom, who was still licking his wounds from the attack by Ricochet, and then they sort of just lingered on the two of them. Nothing happened. That was the end of the segment. But then we got into the good stuff. And this was really the only truly good thing, I thought, on this entire show, which was Drew McIntyre one-on-one here at the top of the hour with Sami Zayn. They ended up at ringside where Zayn hit a moonsault off the barricade. Back in the ring, McIntyre regained control with a suplex, and then later, Sami fired back with a series of strikes, tossed McIntyre over the top rope. Sami kicked McIntyre through the ropes and then dove out over the top rope onto him. But McIntyre caught him and then flung him. And when I say flung, he flung him like garbage over the announce desk. And that took us into a commercial break. Zayn hit McIntyre with a flip dive a little bit later on from the ring to the floor. And he rolled McIntyre back inside, went up top. Drew cut him off. McIntyre went to the middle rope and set up for White Noise, and Sami slowly wiggles his way out of it, and then upon landing, he hits a sunset bomb, which got, honestly, it sounded, outside of all the heat that Dominic got earlier, this was like the biggest reaction that anything got on the entire show up to this point, was the sunset bomb. And he got it for a near fall. McIntyre stuffed the Blue Thunder Bomb attempt, dropped Zayn with a Glasgow Kiss. McIntyre counted down. He was counting down for the Claymore. Zayn, though, ended up catching it with a big boot, then followed through with a Blue Thunder Bomb for a good near fall. McIntyre battled back with a couple of suplexes and a neckbreaker. Here comes Rhea Ripley. And Sami catches Drew off guard with an exploder into the corner. He went to the corner, and he went for the Huluva kick, but Ripley climbed up onto the apron and distracted him, and then McIntyre put Zayn away finally with a Claymore kick for the win. Wade Barrett on commentary said that Ripley showed McIntyre that the Judgment Day can make things a little bit easier for him. And Ripley just smiled as McIntyre left the ring. He never even acknowledged her. He just blew right past her. And Rhea just stood there smiling. I thought Zayn was possibly doing a stretcher job here at the end of this, just based on what he said to Jey Uso in the back earlier, where he said, what I do to Sami out there is on you. That's on your head. That's your fault. So I thought Sami was going out on a stretcher, and he didn't. I guess beating him was enough. The Rhea distraction, again, adds a little bit of intrigue to the will-he-won't-he aspect of Drew's story here, as far as the Judgment Day goes. But like I said, I just don't see that being a good fit. But this was easily the best thing on the entire show up to this point and even after. And the first time where it felt like the crowd was genuinely excited for something on this show. Backstage, Nick Aldis was shown talking to Caden Carter and Katana Chance, who both were wearing blue. Adam Pearce showed up, was not very happy. He dismissed the two ladies, sent them away, told Aldis, look, I appreciate you coming to Raw. I invited you to stay and watch the show, but that doesn't mean that I want you chatting with my superstars. And Aldis said it was just a friendly conversation. He said, look, it's been a tough night for you, and I'm going to make this easy for you. He goes, I'm just going to leave. And Pearce said that was a great idea. They shook hands. Aldis left. After he left, Pearce is standing there, and Nikki Cross, very slowly, again, just staring blankly ahead, just slowly passes by him. And Pearce says that he needed a drink. So did I, after watching this show. Big Bronson Reed against Akira Tozawa. know what this felt like? I'll tell you what this felt like. Maybe outside of the Drew and Sammy match, but this felt like WWE Rampage. That's what, it just hit me now. That's what this show felt like tonight. This felt like WWE Rampage. If Rampage was 3 hours every week, which sounds horrendous, by the way. But that's what this show was tonight. So Bronson Reed against Akira Tozawa. This did not last very long before Reed squashed him with the tsunami. And the crowd in Dallas, for those of you wondering how into this match they were, the crowd in Dallas entertained themselves with chants of Astro suck. Not a good night for the Astros tonight. I was watching the scoreboard earlier. It looked like their season was hanging by a thread. And then just as I was coming on the air tonight, I guess that was the final nail in the coffin for the Houston Astros. And the Rangers picked up the win. I guess the Rangers removed all of the garbage cans from the stadium before the game. See? Smart strategy there by the Texas Rangers. Backstage, the Alpha Academy, they were talking with the New Day in the tag team locker room. And Otis was holding a Dallas Cowboys replica title belt, which they are selling online. I still don't believe they have one for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I believe that is the only one that is missing. Pretty sure that's the only one that's missing. So Tozawa walked in. He was holding an ice pack on his ribs, selling his injuries from the match that he just had with Bronson Reed. Gable told him he would make him a great tag team wrestler. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa showed up, and they talked about being back together for the first time in 3 years. They told Tozawa, "You're still a hero," and they gave him the replica belt, and Tozawa did a little dance with the belt. Who cares? Drew McIntyre was shown walking backstage, and Seth Rollins entered the picture, and he congratulated him on his first win as the newest member of the Judgment Day. And McIntyre told Rollins that he's paranoid and said, "You know, I didn't hear you say no earlier to Rhea Ripley's offer." So Rollins said he doesn't need them now, he doesn't need them ever, nor does he need them to beat Drew at Crown Jewel. And McIntyre said that he doesn't need them either. So Rollins said, "No Judgment Day?" And McIntyre agreed and said, "No Judgment Day." Rollins said, "May the best man win." And Drew said, "He will." I like this. I like the back and forth between the two of them. Again, Drew's story arc has been the most intriguing part of Monday Night Raw. And it's funny because Drew was gone for so many months and there were a lot of rumors about him and his contract status and his disappointment with the creative that they laid out for him, and he wasn't going to come back until they had something solid for him. And, you know, you hear the expression that there's two sides to every story, right? There's one side, there's the other side, and there's the truth. And I'm sure there's some truth. The truth is in the middle as far as, you know, what went down there with those conversations between them. And I'm still not sure if Drew is officially re-signed or not, but if Drew is concerned about his creative, I don't see how he can really have an issue with his creative so far, because, again, they really have taken great steps, I think, to make his character more interesting than it's been in years on this show. And I still think he's headed for a heel turn. I think he has to lose first. He has to lose to Seth Rollins at Crown Jewel. I think him losing is an important part of this next, you know, wherever this character is going next. I think he does have to lose first, and maybe that sends him off the deep end. But honestly, he's been one of the best parts outside of Gunther, one of the best parts of Monday Night Raw. And then we got main event Jey Uso, one-on-one with Damian Priest. They do the introductions, right? Jey Uso comes out first, right? They play his music, and everybody in the crowd is doing the Jey Uso. I will tell you, I cannot hear that theme music anymore and not think of the videos from TikTok, the high school videos. Jey Uso in high school, LA Knight in high school, Cody Rhodes in high school. I can't not think about that. Every time I hear this music and I see him doing this, it's just, I can't. Like, it's burned into my brain now. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go on TikTok, go on Twitter, and type it in. Type WWE in high school, and watch those videos. I don't know who's putting these videos together, but I wish they had something like that on Peacock. If they did a whole 30-minute weekly sitcom, I would watch. So Jey Uso comes out, and then Damian Priest comes out. They ring the bell to signal the beginning of the match. We were not even a minute, not even a full minute into this main event match. Jey Uso hits a suicide dive. They cut right to another commercial. Absolutely insufferable. Absolutely insufferable when they do this, especially with a main event. Jey fights off Priest, who is going for the South of Heaven chokeslam, and he puts him down with a Samoan drop. Brother Ray, I'm telling you, you've never seen these videos. Find them. They're like 90 seconds long. They're not long clips, but they're very good. I would love to see them do the next version of 2K. If they did an entire WWE video game, call it WWE High School or like High School Challenge or something, and just build an entire game around it, I think that would be very entertaining. It'd be a hell of a lot more entertaining than Fight Forever was. I feel like that game was pretty much played out after 2 weeks. So, a We Want Tables chant broke out. We did not get tables, but that's what the people wanted to see. Jey went for a suicide dive on Priest, who caught him and dropped him with a flatliner onto the lid of the announce desk. Back inside, Priest delivered another flatliner, this time for a two count. Jey came back with a spear, followed up with an Uso splash off the top, but the referee, he never even dropped down to start the count. He saw Finn Balor coming from the back. I don't know, maybe Balor was late. I don't know, whatever it was, but here comes Balor. I said the referee is distracted by him. And he climbs up on the apron. Jey sees this. He knocks Balor down. Then he hits him with the suicide dive. When Jey gets back to the apron, Priest threw punches at him. The referee went to go pull Priest away. He took his eye off the ball. That gave Finn Balor a chance to pull Jey's leg and crotched him on the middle rope as he was getting back in the ring. Priest then hit the South of Heaven chokeslam and he got the three count. Terrible ending to this match. Terrible. Terrible, shitty ending to this match. After it was over, Balor attacked Jey and he hit him with a double stomp. Balor and Priest then grabbed chairs. They were about to finish this guy off when Cody Rhodes, to his music, of course, you must play the music first. Cody Rhodes on one good leg. Doesn't even have a shoe on the other leg, on the other foot. Hobbles all the way down to the ring with a chair. And he made short work of Balor. He was about to Pillmanize Priest's ankle. As Michael Cole on commentary said, an eye for an eye. A foot for a foot, basically. Went to go break his ankle. Balor, though, dragged him out to safety. And Jey and Cody embraced as the show ended. So they hit Cody in the ankle at the beginning of the show with a chair, right? They injured him in the opening segment of the show just for him to hobble to the ring on one leg at the very end and chase off both heels all by himself. Okay. That's certainly one way to book that. Cody against Priest, though, I will say it again. With nothing on the line at Crown Jewel, doesn't excite me. There should be something on the line. Damian Priest has a little something that Cody Rhodes should want. Now, Cody Rhodes can ask for it. That doesn't mean that Damian Priest is going to say yes. If Damian Priest was challenged to a match to put his money in the bank contract on the line, if I were him, I would laugh at Cody Rhodes. But that's why I say, I wonder if JD McDonagh potentially could factor into things, right? He's been sort of a thorn in Damian's side recently. There's always a way to, you know, these are proud men here. And so there's always a way for Cody to sweet-talk his way into getting Priest to agree to a Money in the Bank match. And we'll see, because that would make the most sense to me, even if Cody loses. Just to have something on the line in this match, make it feel like, okay, there's a reason, a real reason why these two are going one-on-one, because it feels like we've just seen some version of it so many times before. So I was when this show was finally over, I was like, my God, I don't know. I don't know how we go from the last 2 weeks to what we got tonight, but it really felt to me like they knew that they were up against football and a big baseball game, And they were just like, all right, whatever, we'll mail it in for 1 week. You know, we're not going to do anything crazy because there's going to be people watching other sports tonight. That's what it felt like to me. There was no real hook for this show. There was no hook where when the show started, it kind of kept you interested in finding out what was going to happen at the very end, right? We didn't have anything like that on the show tonight. It was more Judgment Day stuff. We get that every single week. And it was a bunch of people that we don't usually see that people don't give a shit about. And it's going to take time to educate them about why they should care about these people and get them involved in actual storylines. We saw the beginning of that tonight with people like Nikki Cross. And now we have to wait and give Triple H a chance to flesh him out. And we'll see. We'll see if he can help get them over. Some will, some won't. But tonight was not one of the better Raw shows that I have seen. Tonight was a fucking bore for a good majority of the show. Outside of that Drew McIntyre and Sami Zayn match, there is absolutely nothing on this show that I would recommend you go back and watch if you didn't see it. Check out Drew and Sami. You don't have to watch anything else. You didn't miss anything special. One thing that Triple H is good at doing so far is announcing a pretty full card for the show a week in advance. And so he's already announced for next week. Seth Rollins one-on-one with JD McDonagh, non-title. Damian Priest, Dominic, Wrong Judgment Day member. Dominic Mysterio, one-on-one with Ricochet, also non-title. Candice LeRae against Xia Li. And for the first time in 3 years, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa will be taking on Imperium, Ludwig Kaiser, and Giovanni Vinci. Undertaker 805, I love you too. Thank you, Undertaker. By the way, all the channel members, don't forget, you got those Rawful emojis that you have access to. So if you liked Raw about as much as I did, let's see those Rawful emojis. Actually, let's check the chat or check the poll and see if people are in agreement. Oh, yeah. 37% thumbs up for tonight's show. 62.7% thumbs down for Mundane Night Raw. And go vote at Solomonster on Twitter. If you want to chime in, let me know what you thought of tonight's show. A very boring show. Dull as dishwater is the way that I would describe tonight's show. Let's see here. This will be more interesting than Raw. This portion right here alone. Oh, we got Jacqueline Fowler with the $24 super chat says, hey Solo, if I had to recommend one horror game franchise to you, it would be F-E-A-R. Even John Carpenter is a fan. He even worked on the third one. If you don't mind me asking, where did you get that picture of the glowing trees? Oh, you mean the one over my shoulder? Mixed Tiles. They have an art section on there. I believe Nick Fluke is the name of the art. Actually, Nick Fluke has a whole bunch of different paintings. You can't see it because on camera you can't see it, but there's an astronaut who's kind of walking through the forest. There's a path, and then there's different trees with different glowing doors on them. So he has other paintings like that that have the astronaut in it. Nick Fluke, F-L-O-O-K. Might have his own website, but there you go. Hopefully that helps. I hope that answers your question, Jack. Thank you for the super chat. Jazz Jackrabbit. In Montreal, at a red light, the car next to me is blasting a familiar voice. Your Dynamite review. He told me he's a fan since 2013. To that guy, thumbs up for having great taste. Hashtag Solomonster Worldwide. Hell yeah. That's what I like here. See? Bringing people together on the road. You hear about all this road rage. Everybody cutting people off, flipping them off. Fuck you, eat shit. It's nice to hear a story like this where people, wait a minute, you know, Solomonster bringing people together on the road. I like hearing that. Brandon is a big John Carpenter fan in the chat. I like to see that. Hey, Yachiru, have a good night. I like to see that because I'm a huge John Carpenter fan. In fact, last night I watched the original Halloween on DVD in 4K. And the documentary that went with it in the extras. Nothing like the original. John Carpenter is the man. HBK C83, would you be tempted to put the Money in the Bank case on the line for Cody and Damian to crown jewel? Absolutely. Put it on the line. The real CSO2, with Triple H having full creative control over WWE, could you see him letting more talent wrestle for other companies? No. Nick Grosso. Got to give Nick a shout out. Again, he mentioned that earlier. The storyline with McIntyre, Rollins, and the Judgment Day reminds me of the Mr. Perfect, Ric Flair, Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior storyline heading into SummerSlam 1992. You are correct, sir. That is a very good pickup. A good eye from Nick Grosso. Paul Carpenter. No relation to John, I don't think. Did they really have to bury House of Black's return for a Moxley return? Don't you think that that could have waited? And did you see Moxley push Orange Cassidy on the ramp? It looked real. It was not real. Oh, man. It's still real to Paul, though. It's still real to Paul. Moxley and Orange Cassidy, man, they're feuding over the international titles. That's all that was. And I have no issue with what they did with House of Black on Collision on Saturday. It's good to finally have them back. It's good to see Malakai Black back from injury. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing him one-on-one with Bryan Danielson, hopefully at Full Gear. Chris Mikesell with a $9.99. I noticed no one is cast to play Chris Von Erich, the youngest brother. Sure, he wasn't going to be a top star in the wrestling business, but it feels like he's getting ignored and also committed suicide. Well, I mean, he just didn't play a big enough role. MJF is in the movie. I think he plays Lance Von Erich. I think the fake Von Erich brother? Cousin? Cousin, right? So he's in the movie. Andy. Not the greatest episode, but I feel Raw has the best written characters in wrestling with defined motivations and interpersonal dynamics. Epitomized by the new Drew. This element is non-existent on SmackDown. You mean to tell me you're not riveted by Paul Heyman talking into his phone every week and telling his phone to call Roman Reigns when he's not there? That doesn't interest you? That's not exciting to you? Call Roman Reigns. That doesn't excite you every week? I'm shocked. Nasir Alexander, Triple H, loves them muscular women. He has a type. Nothing wrong with that. Devin from New Jersey. Who was Solo's favorite character on The Wire? Oh, boy. On The Wire? This is my favorite character on The Wire. Bunk. McNulty's partner. Yeah, I think he was my favorite. Devin says, also, who would Solomonster rather sit in on a multi-day long wiretap with? Vince Russo or Disco Inferno? I would rather drive into oncoming traffic. Griga, thank you for the $2. Joseph Brooks says, do you think Seth Rollins is boring as a babyface champion? I'm starting to feel recently the same way I did when he was the champion in 2019, and that was worse. Yeah, I mean, he's pretty boring as a, look at what he does. He comes out there. And he does that cackle, and he dresses, I don't know, he dresses like a clown. He does that very annoying laugh, trying to pretend that he's the Joker. And then he gets serious every now and then, and it's not as bad. So, again, his character is just weird to begin with, and just not very relatable. for someone who's supposed to be a babyface world champion face of the brand. Not very relatable, but I'm trying to remember the babyface run from 2019. I don't remember hating it, but yeah, I mean, I think he's pretty boring, I would say. And Boney, is Seth's title reign, does it feel overshadowed by Gunther's? Every title reign in this company, except Roman Reigns, just by virtue of how long he's been champion for, is completely overshadowed by Gunther's Intercontinental reign. I mean, Seth Rollins just won the title in May. You know, I mean, and a lot of weeks, it's Gunther who's headlining Monday Night Raw, defending his championship. You know, they save Seth for the pay-per-views. It's rare the last several months that we even get an Intercontinental title match on a pay-per-view. We had one at SummerSlam. We had none at Fastlane. We had none at Payback. I'm not sure we're getting one at Survivor Series either. We don't have one for Crown Jewel. But, yeah, I mean, outside of Roman, his title run is second to no one's. And he's already the best champion in the entire company. NXT, Raw, SmackDown, doesn't matter. It's Gunther. Period. End of story. Will Chisholm. Thank you for the five. How bad is Vince having a nervous breakdown not being the booker? You can tell he's not 15 women was on the show. You can tell he's not. 15 women were on the show. P.S. Endeavor went heel on Vince. I'd like to sit here and tell you, boy, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in Vince McMahon's house and know what he's thinking and know what he's feeling right now, but I gotta be honest with you, I don't give a shit. Because he's out of the picture. We don't have to worry about that anymore. We don't have to come online and hear stories about the fucking script being blown up 2 hours before the show. This thing got pulled. This segment got pulled. It's mass chaos. And we don't gotta worry about any of that stuff. So I'm sure that he is not very happy to be cut out of the process the way that he is after 40 plus years of sitting in the chair, right? Being the one who basically oversees the entire operation. I'm sure it's a very weird thing for him to not be in total control the way that he used to be, right? Isn't that too bad? My heart bleeds for him. Dynamite on Wednesday night has the in-ring debut of Okada. That is reason enough to tune into Dynamite on Wednesday. He'll be teaming with Orange Cassidy against Bryan Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli. So that I am very much looking forward to. Jazz Jackrabbit says, which one is worse, Cody's neck tattoo or Sarah? Oh, nothing will be worse than Sarah. Getting your girlfriend or wife's name tattooed across your Adam's apple is a fucking terrible idea. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much you think you love her. I don't care how long you've been together. Frankly, getting anything tattooed across your Adam's apple is a terrible fucking idea. But especially that. That in particular is something that is just a terrible idea. And he had it lasered off, too. So just think about how that must have felt. I'm sure that sucked, and I'm sure that he was not very happy about that, but when you do something stupid like that, that's the sort of thing you got to deal with. You got to deal with the consequences. So there you go. But anyway, yeah, Dynamite on Wednesday night, then of course we have SmackDown on Friday, another contract signing. We had one tonight. We have another contract signing on Friday. This time it's Roman Reigns and LA Knight are going to sign the contract for their championship match coming up at Crown Jewel. And I am being told in the chat that we have just hit 400. Is that true? Very, very, very true indeed. Yes, 402. So thank you very much. Again, another buzzer beater here for Be the Booker. 400 likes. I thank you. Keep those likes up. You have not already done so. I appreciate it. Retro KOH, final pitch for the people to like. Well, they've already hit the goal, brother. They're already done. It's time to breathe the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Oh, look, it's the Judgment Day. If we don't get enough of them already. All right, let's be the Booker. You guys wanted it. You guys nailed the goal. And so we will begin here on the men's side of the coin. And we will begin with the phenomenal one, AJ Styles. Here and be the Booker. Still out selling his injuries at the hands of the Bloodline. Nowhere to be found on SmackDown. And we got AJ Styles going one-on-one with Jake the Snake Roberts. Classic heel Jake against AJ Styles. Man, you thought Samoa Joe coming out and talking about Wendy and screaming Wendy's name every week was something. Imagine Jake the Snake cutting those very quiet, subdued promos about AJ's wife. That'd be great. All right, we move on to the women's side of Be the Booker. And we begin with Dr. Britt Baker, the former AEW Women's World Champion, Britt Baker. The beloved Britt Baker. I'm sure everybody in this chat is a Britt Baker fan. Britt Baker going to go one-on-one with Mandy Rose. Very simple. I see Mandy Rose, I ring the bell. That's how this works. Mandy Rose, she definitely improved during her time in NXT. There's no doubt about that. I don't know how good the match would be, but she gets my vote. So that's two for two. Tag teams, we begin. Oh, look at this. It's Deuce and Domino, the former SmackDown Tag Team Champions. And there's Cherry. Remember Cherry? We got Cherry in the middle. Wait. Pretend that didn't happen. Take two. And action. So we got Deuce and Domino. Let's see who they're going to be wrestling. Deuce and Domino against the Kings of Wrestling, Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. I love the Kings of Wrestling. Not doing that because of them. Deuce and Domino, though, against almost anybody. It's just not a marquee match. You know, it's just like, eh. If it was these two guys against almost anybody else, I think I would have gone Bell on that one. But nah, eh. Nothing special. I don't know what's going on here. Man, I must really hate that match. What the hell's going on with me? Man, I got an itchy trigger finger tonight. Mr. Ozone says, it's too late. You hit the bell. Three for three. I guess I did. I technically did hit the bell, so I think you're right. And Trill Mexican says, Dixie Carter walked, so Brie Bella can walk on Be the Booker. I wonder, you know, with this TNA rebranding now, TNA Wrestling is coming back. Wouldn't it be something if we got Delusional Dixie back? I had to start reviewing TNA again. It's like the old days. The old Delusional Dixie days. You always have that gold waiting for you in the archives. It's all there. Hey, West Coast James, a member for 29 months, giving me the fist bump. I give you a fist bump right back, brother. I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Definitely not the best episode of Raw tonight, but hopefully this review makes it a little more palatable. And we'll come back on Wednesday night, and we'll do it all over again, talking AEW Dynamite. Also, Tony Khan is going to have a gift. He's going to have a gift for Sting. Maybe it's when, you know, Hogan walked out of TNA, and Dixie Carter latched onto his leg and wouldn't let go. And maybe that's what Tony Khan is going to do. As Sting goes to leave, he's going to latch onto his leg and he's not going to let go. Because that's something I could see Tony Khan doing. Hey, Marquand chiming in with a $10 super chat. I like that you gave the Sting and Vader strap match its flowers. It was a brutal classic. So speaking of Sting, if you missed it, I did a whole segment on Sting on the podcast this weekend and talked a lot about him and his career and obviously his retirement coming up in AEW and possible opponents. But I also went and I ranked the 10 best matches of Sting's career. So if you missed it, the countdown, I lumped it together. It's all the whole segment just went up today on the YouTube channel, but it's also on the podcast from Sunday. And so chime in on there, leave a comment, let me know what you think of my countdown, if you've got a ranking of your own. I really am a huge fan of the Sting and Vader feud from the early 90s in WCW. And all three matches are on the countdown, but the White Castle of Fear strap match, to me, is their best match. So that one is pretty high up there on that list. I love all their matches together, but that one in particular, I think is their best. And it was definitely a classic, that is for sure. So if you missed it, go check that out. When are we getting a funniest moments of Solomon? I think he just got one right here. I don't know what I was hitting the buzzer there so many times. My finger, I went to go here and it went here. I'm doing buzzers, I'm doing bells. I don't know what I'm doing here. That's the official sound effect of tonight's show. Actually, you want to know what the official sound effect is for Monday Night Raw tonight? There you go. That about sums it up right there. Thanks, Dallas. All right, I'm out of here. I'll see you guys on Wednesday night. Hopefully we get a better show. Until then, take care, guys.